Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a couple of subjects in the news as we count down this hour before President Obama's State of the Union speech. First, we'll go to Cairo, Egypt, to get an update on the unprecedented demonstrations that erupted today against the Mubarak regime that many consider were inspired by the recent events in Tunisia. Sheila Karapiko, the chair of the Political Science Department at American University in Cairo, joins us from Cairo. Then we will discuss the president's upcoming State of the Union with a longtime Washington observer, Charles Peters, the founder of the Washington Monthly, who has seen the Washington political culture change over the decades and not for the better. Then we'll get an historical perspective on the constitutional requirement of a State of the Union and how previous presidents have turned their fortunes around, as many feel Obama must do if he is to get a second term. Presidential historian Edward France joins us for the last 15 minutes or so before we go to President Obama's State of the Union live here on KPFK. I'd like to remind you that I'll be moderating a free public forum at the UCLA Hammer Museum this Thursday, January the 27th at 7 p.m., free and open to the public. The title is Afghanistan, America's Longest War. I'll be joined by Afghan broadcaster Spasmai Maiwandi and the president of the American Institute for Afghanistan Studies, anthropologist Thomas Barfield. So it'll be a very interesting evening, and I hope you can come. Let's now go to Cairo, Egypt. I'm speaking with Sheila Karapiko, who's the chair of the Political Science Department at American University in Cairo. There have been substantial demonstrations today in Cairo, very unprecedented. There's an assumption largely that this is a follow-on from what happened in Tunisia. Could you describe for us what is going on in Cairo, Sheila?
What is going on in Cairo is that a lot of people have taken to the streets to see what is going to happen. And what's striking, I think, is the kind of cross-class, widespread nature of these demonstrations. They're not very well organized. You know, no one specifically, no particular known party or known political personality called for them. People just went out on the streets.
Motivated, I believe, by social media, by Facebook. Is that right?
I mean, the one that I saw, the most poignant appeal that I saw on Facebook and via YouTube and some other social media was a very eloquent statement by the mother of a young man who was killed in a police station in Alexandria in October. And she posted about a two-minute YouTube video, which, you know, hit Facebook and other social media, just calling for people to go out on the streets today, and a lot of people did.
And the protesters are crying out, "We are all Khalid Said." Is that that's his name, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah, it was, you know, apparently someone who is not guilty but was treated extremely badly in a police station in Alexandria. And this news of this has been going around now for, 3 months? But today, likely inspired by the Tunisian protests, there was a call for people to take to the streets, and they did. And they did so in very significant numbers.
And Sheila Karapiko, there are, of course, similarities, surely, with Tunisia in terms of a hatred of the dictator, the sense of oppression from the police, who are widely despised, I understand, and terrible unemployment, rising food prices, and just a kind of stifling stagnation.
Yeah, I mean, Egypt is a wonderful place, but things have gone really awry. I mean, you noticed it in the filth in the streets. You noticed it in the price of meat and other foodstuffs. You notice it in a kind of malaise, ennui. It seems to kind of pervade the streets. And yet at the same time, people are apparently kind of hopeful because, you know, they've got this notion that perhaps if many voices come together, something can change.
And how much is the glue of this demonstration, which has obviously caught the government by surprise, and as you said a little while ago, Sheila Karapiko, it crosses all kind of class lines in terms of education and wealth, etc. I take it that what is commonly felt in terms of the people's anger is the amount of corruption.
I mean, the amount of corruption, the privilege of, I mean, I spoke of a cross-class alliance, but that obviously doesn't include the very, very top of the political class. But it does include, I think, many professionals, intellectuals, journalists, college professors, as well as, you know, taxi drivers, factory workers, unemployed people. There's a sense of things in Egypt having gone, you know, very badly awry. And yet that's combined with a sense that Egyptians have of Egypt being a kind of special place where things ought to work better than they do.
Again, I'm speaking with Sheila Karapika, who's a chair of the Political Science Department at the American University in Cairo. But in terms of comparisons with Tunisia, and clearly a lot of the people in the streets are making those comparisons, those that are demonstrating, Tunisia has had quite a high level of education. I take it that Egypt is not similar in that regard. And also, you know, there's a lot of illiteracy and internet penetration is comparatively low in Egypt.
Yes, but, I mean, the nature of the society is such that, I mean, for example, I mean, my Facebook at the moment is just lighting up. I mean, someone is posting every few seconds. And it's true that, you know, my Facebook friends are mostly intellectuals who post in English and French and Arabic. But they all have relatives and friends and doormen and neighbors and associates. And so although it's by no means the case that everyone in Egypt is wired and online as I am, it is the case that these media are producing, you know, cell phone videos and word-of-mouth extensions. So you do have the sense of between what's going on in the street and what's going on Facebook and Twitter and so forth, that, you know, there's a kind of, virtual public sphere that's galvanizing at the moment.
And I take it that all of these predictions amongst political scientists and specialists on the Arab world that I speak to on a fairly regular basis, Sheila Karapika, there is this sense that the only alternative to Mubarak is the Muslim Brotherhood. And I believe that's the kind of realpolitik feeling in the State Department, at least has been for the last few decades. This seems to be, this demonstration seems to be refuting that. I take it that the people who are demonstrating are just as disgusted with Mubarak as they are with the Muslim Brotherhood. And this is a whole new political expression here.
Well, I mean, it's true that, as you say, in the past two decades, that the Mubarak administration has convinced the United States and other Western governments that the only alternative is the Muslim Brotherhood. But this particular demonstration is clearly not spearheaded by the Brotherhood, although, I gather that there's a fair amount of support among the Brotherhood. But, I mean, there have been in the past, in the last election in 2005, in the presumed upcoming presidential elections of 2011, there are other candidates besides somebody named Mubarak, and people are less and less convinced that the choice is either secular corruption or kind of fundamentalist reactionary politics. So I think that may be, you may have put your finger on it. I mean, that may be the thing that has changed, that people no longer believe that there are only these two options.
And would that create an opening for the Nobel Laureate Prize winner, Mohamed El-Baradei, who is attempting to be an independent candidate?
I mean, quite possibly. It could be an opening for El-Baradei, who is a very popular figure in Egypt. Possibly, but it may also be that the point of this demonstration, and again, not unlike what's going on in Tunisia, is that it's not so much about the public coalescing behind one candidate or one leader or one alternative faction so much as recognizing that that almost any alternative, or that there are a number of alternatives to the existing order.
Well, apparently the security services in Egypt are fairly sophisticated and fairly ubiquitous. I believe they're already trying to shut down Twitter and cell phone and texting. So what is the prognosis, Sheila Karapiko, again, the chair of the Political Science Department at the American University in Cairo, who's in Cairo as we speak, where there are substantial and unprecedented demonstrations held today? Is there a sense of not so much a comparison with Tunisia, but a comparison with Romania under Ceausescu, that suddenly the emperor has no clothes, even though there's
In any of these things, I mean, whether it's Romania or Tunisia or Iran or many years ago Nicaragua, I mean, you know, the security forces in Egypt are very ubiquitous and they're very powerful and they're very well organized, but they also consist of sons and husbands and fathers and cousins and neighbors of ordinary Egyptians. And as we saw in Tunisia, I mean, and many years ago in Iran, when the moment comes, and I'm not saying it's come in Egypt, but we saw some glimmer of it today, when the moment comes that the security forces decline to follow an order to fire on the crowds, then the security forces have become something very different. And again, I don't think we passed that line today, but that is on some level the question. You know, the security forces are also members of the public.
But is there a sense, Sheila Karapiko, that tomorrow it will build? I mean, I suppose there's no way of telling until the sun comes up, right?
I think that if tomorrow dawns and, you know, life is back to normal in Cairo, which is to say that, you know, the traffic is clogged and the smog is bad and all of that. I mean, that may be the case tomorrow. It may not be that there are any demonstrations tomorrow, but there is something today which has galvanized the public imagination.
And some of the reporting suggests a kind of new fearlessness where people are shouting in the street about Mubarak's son, the designated heir, Gamal, shouting, "Gamal, tell your father Egyptians hate you." So would you say that a line has been crossed here in terms of, or has this been seething under the surface for some time? But my impression is that this is the first time there's been a public display of contempt for the leadership.
You know, I mean, my sense until this week has been that there is a certain element of the Egyptian youth that do identify with the president's son, Gamal Mubarak. And so I wouldn't write him off necessarily. On the other hand, I think that, you know, what we saw today was an overwhelming show of disgust with the way things are going and the people who are in charge.
Well, I just in closing, then, do you have a sense that this is the beginning of something?
I have the sense I'm not going to say, okay, we're in the middle of an Egyptian revolution now, but I think that there's a momentum that will not have dissipated itself in one day of public demonstrations. I expect maybe not tomorrow, everything may be clear and calm, but I think that we need to take more seriously the idea that there is a public civic sphere in Egypt and that it's been mobilized.
And I think what we've learned from you is that it's not this kind of Hobson's choice between Islamic fundamentalism and a kind of sclerotic autocracy.
Yeah, I think that's increasingly clear. I think that, you know, Egyptian intellectuals and non-Egyptians who watch Egypt closely have become, you know, increasingly wary of that kind of simplistic formula. Well, you know, you got to stick with Mubarak because otherwise the only option is kind of right-wing reactionary conservatism. And I think that the Egyptian public doesn't believe that those are the only two possibilities for a society like Egypt.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us from Cairo this evening. I know it's very late for you, Sheila Karapiko, and we much appreciate your joining us here today.
All right. Well, good evening.
Good evening. Thank you. Again, I was speaking with Sheila Karapiko, who's the chair of the Political Science Department at the American University in Cairo. She researches political economy and development issues in the Arab world. She's also the author of Civil Society in Yemen, The Political Economy of Activism in Modern Arabia. And her forthcoming book is titled Political Aid, Democracy Promotion and the Paradoxes of Empowerment. She's also a contributing editor to Middle East Report. Let's take a brief station break and we'll be back talking with the founder of The Washington Monthly, Charles Peters.